All right, heparin. Let's talk about heparin first. Heparin is a collection of substances that share a common central molecule. So if we put all of those substances together, we end up with what we call unfractionated heparin. So unfractionated heparin is a bunch of different heparin-like molecules all stuck together in one syringe or IV bag. Then we have what we call low molecular weight heparins. And these are when you take only one of those molecule types and you put a bunch of similar molecules together. And I think I have a picture of that right here. So in unfractionated heparin, you have, see the central molecule right here? And then it's surrounded by these little chains of proteins. In regular unfractionated heparin, these protein chains are all different lengths. In low molecular weight heparins, they're all the same length. Does that make sense? You guys look at me like I'm crazy. Okay, so one more time. Unfractionated heparin, you have a bunch of different protein chains. And in low molecular weight, you have all the same kind of protein chain. But otherwise, the center part, the part that actually works, is exactly the same. And the way they work is inactivation of thrombin and factor 10A for unfractionated heparin. And in low molecular weight heparin, it's inactivation of factor 10A only. So if you remember way, way back to our clotting cascade, the final step, factor 10 turns to 10A, which turns prothrombin into thrombin, and thrombin activates fibrin. So what we're going to do is we're going to break this step right here. If we break this step or slow it down, we're going to have less fibrin being formed. If there's less fibrin being formed, any clot that happens because of a platelet will not be as stable. It'll break down more easily. Nod if you're with me. Blink twice if you have no idea what's going on. Here? All right, now what I would like for you to think of is heparin has really long arms. Now, how many of you have ever owned a dog with a really long whippy tail or been around someone who has a dog with a really long whippy tail? What does that whippy tail do? Like next, you have to clear everything out of the room at that height or the dog will knock it over by accident. Now, so what do we do with a dog that has a whippy tail in some breeds? So my little vicious man killer, Glory, she's only got a tail this big. It's really cute. Yeah. So in cutting that tail off, now she can't do all that damage by accident, right? Okay. Same concept with heparin. Unfractionated heparin has a really long tail, and that tail causes lots of interactions and side effects. Low molecular weight heparin has a very short tail, so it doesn't have as many interactions and side effects. All right, now, neither heparin is absorbed by mouth. They get broken down into individual amino acids if you take them by mouth. So what you have to do is you have to take them IV or subcutaneously. They do not cross the blood-brain barrier, they don't cross the placenta, and they don't cross milk ducts. So if we have a pregnant woman who needs to be anticoagulated, heparin or low molecular weight heparin is the drugs of choice, because it's not going to make the baby bleed, and it's not going to cause any brain problems. Now, availability. Availability in the blood. Regular heparin is going to bind to plasma proteins. It's going to bind to monocytes. It's going to bind to endothelial cells. Basically, it'll bind to anything it can get its little whippy tail around. As a result of that, it's very unpredictable, which means that a person could be on the same dose for a little while, and then you check their bleeding times again, and they're all off. So the next to this, you're going to put constant monitoring. There you go. Careful monitoring. Monitoring of what? Say again? Okay, what are we monitoring? How do we know this person's bleeding time? PTT. So what we're going to monitor is PTT levels. So if the PTT levels are too high, what's the patient at risk for? Clotting too slowly, and if that's too high, so they're going to clot so slowly that they could bleed to death, or they're at risk for bleeding. If it's too low, then they're at risk for clotting and dying of a clot. So the key with heparin is you've got to constantly monitor them, move it up a little, move it down a little, move it up a little, move it down a little, and you're trying to make sure they're in that safe range where they're therapeutic but not toxic. Now, the problem with heparin is that it's unpredictable. I don't know if the same dose that I give Joe is going to work on Daphne. If I had Joe's twin sitting right next to him, same genetic makeup, I still don't know if the same dose for him would work on his brother. And I don't know if the dose that worked for him 5 hours ago is going to work on him now. So it is very intensive as far as you have to monitor the patient constantly. Now, the typical protocol is going to be you're going to start the heparin, and you're going to check PTT every 6 hours. Once the patient has been therapeutic for 2 times in a row, then you can check it every 8 hours. And I know that doesn't sound like a lot. I thought you said it was intensive. That's only every 6 hours, Dr. Heyman. That's easy. That's only twice a shift. The problem is, what's going to happen is your patient is going to be on the drip, and phlebotomy is supposed to come around and take his blood, but, you know, they were an hour late getting the blood, and then you were really busy with some other patients, so you didn't get to read them until an hour after that. So now it's 2 hours afterwards, and the patient's been bleeding for 2 hours because you didn't get his labs on time. So then you're like, okay, well, how far do I turn it down? And so there's a lot of oversteer. How many of you have ever driven a rear-wheel drive car? In rain, I have a little Miata, you know, it's a rear-wheel drive car. The very first time it rained, and I pulled out of my neighborhood, I nearly spun out because, you know, I just drive normally, and halfway through that turn, it's just, you know, the back wheels kick in, and you go, whoosh. So then what do? You turn the other way, and then suddenly you're spinning the other direction. You spin this way, and you spin that way. That's what happens in heparin a lot. You're always chasing that PTT. So it's a lot of work on the nurse. It's kind of dangerous for the patient. So do you think we have a better alternative? Yes. What has the short tail? The low molecular weight heparins. So low molecular weight heparins are much safer and easier to administer than heparin. All right. Heparin only lasts about 1.5 hours. So the nice thing about heparin is that if a person is overcoagulated, guess what we can do for most of the time? Just stop the drip, and they'll get better in 1.5 hours. Now, if a patient is so bad that you're afraid that they're going to bleed to death before that 1.5 hours is over, there is an antidote you can give them. And it's protamine sulfate. I don't think I ask you any questions about that. But you should know that there is an antidote to heparin. All right, so the usual course of events. Patient needs to be started. So you're going to start with a bolus. You're going to give them a big amount, followed by a drip. So it might be like you give them 500 units to start all up front and within like 20 minutes time, and then they go down to like 60 units an hour, something like that. If you've looked at the quizzes already, there's actually some math problems that you get to work to help you understand how that goes. They're easy math, but if you need help with the math, we can work through some of that. therapeutic action begins to work within seconds. How long? Seconds. Is that nice? Yes. This is very good. If we have a patient who's going to die because they already have a heart attack, heparin is really good because it'll start working within seconds. Once we discontinue it, the effects fade rapidly. Within 1.5 hours, there's only half of it left in the body. So we can use this in pregnancy, women who are at risk for clotting in pregnancy because it doesn't cross the placenta. We can use it in patients who have pulmonary embolisms, DVTs, people who are in the middle of their stroke. In open heart surgery, we use it to prevent the heart from clotting up. We can use it in patients who have dialysis. Now, why would we want to use it in dialysis? What do we do in dialysis? We actually take blood out of a person's body, run it through a machine that acts kind of like an artificial kidney, and then put it back into the person. That process can induce clotting. So if we give a little bit of heparin at the same time that we pull the blood out of the body, it won't clot inside the dialysis machine. So that's the reason for that. We can use it in DIC to prevent loss of platelets and clotting factors. And then we can also use it in acute myocardial infarctions. So when the person is actually having the heart attack. Adverse effects. What do you think the number one is? Bleeding. It makes so much sense. It can also cause a problem called heparin-induced thrombocytopenia. And then the disease caused by this is heparin-induced thrombocytopenia purpura. And there's actually an episode of Scrubs where they have a patient who has that. But you don't really get to learn much about the disease, so I didn't make you watch it. Maybe another time. So what happens in this, heparin-induced, what does that mean? Heparin-caused. And what's thrombocytopenia? Low platelets. So basically, the heparin is killing platelets. So what that's going to do is going to lower the platelet count, and it's going to increase clotting even more. Not that common a side effect, but if it does happen, it can be life-threatening. Some patients are allergic to heparin. And here's a big one. Neurologic surgeries and heparin do not get along. Repeat after me. Neurologic surgeries and heparin do not get along. Neurologic surgeries and heparin do not get along. So
it didn't cross the blood-brain barrier.
Because when you do surgery, you can cut through. So basically, here's the things that we don't want to use heparin in these people. People who already have low platelets, because heparin can cause even lower platelets. Uncontrolled bleeding, well, duh. Surgery of the eye, the brain, the spinal cord, the lumbar, patients who have a lumbar puncture, and any regional spinal anesthesia. So anything that could pierce the blood-brain barrier, you don't want to use heparin in that case. And also the eye. So the reason is because you're cutting through the blood-brain barrier, now the heparin might be able to seep through. All right, interactions. Interacts with other drugs that cause low blood clotting. It'll also bind to a lot of other drugs, but really what that does is it decreases their effectiveness. So the lab monitoring, don't worry about these numbers. In any test question I give you, I'll give you the normal range so that you won't have to memorize the numbers for PTT, because it really varies from one lab to another by as many as 15 seconds. All right. Now, important things about heparin. Heparin is dosed in units, not milligrams, not micrograms, not grains, not pounds. It's dosed in units. Now, unit concentrations. You can have a vial that ranges from 1,000 units per milliliter all the way up to 40,000 per milliliter. It's very easy to give a person the wrong dose by accident. It's very easy for the pharmacist to put the wrong dose in. You have to make sure that you're using the appropriate concentration of heparin. So people have been killed by accident. They thought they were giving 1,000 milliliters per milliliter, and they were actually giving 10,000 units per milliliter, and the patient bled to death. We can give it either IV or subcutaneously. On IV, usually it's going to be a continuous drip. For subcutaneously, you have two options. For subcutaneous, we can either use it for treatment or we can use it for prevention. I've actually never seen it given for treatment, so I'm not going to teach you that. All I'm going to teach you is the prevention. The prevention is usually going to be 5,000 units subcutaneously twice a day, BID. Sometimes you'll see it 5,000 units TID, but that's not as common. So if you see heparin, 5,000 units sub-Q BID, what are you thinking? Prevention of what? DVTs. So anytime you see a patient on heparin, 5,000 units, sub-Q, BID, you're going to think prevention for DVT. Now, what happens if that patient gets a DVT? Is that enough for them? Well, obviously not, because they just got a clot. So then you're going to put them on the IV drip. Oh. And for this 5,000 units BID, you do not need to check PTT. You only need to check the PTT if you're giving therapeutic doses to treat clots or if you're giving it IV. So 5,000 units BID does not require PTT monitoring. All right, now let's talk about the low molecular weight heparins. Again, it's a regular heparin that's had its tail cut off. So it doesn't bind to as many things. What that does for us is it makes it predictable. Now, which drug would you prefer to give, the unpredictable drug or the predictable drug? And if you said unpredictable because I like excitement, slap yourself. Because we, on a hospital floor, you want boring. Boring is good. Boring means no one's dying. Boring means you didn't kill someone by accident. So you want nice and predictable. And the key thing with low molecular weight heparins is you have to have a good patient weight because they're based on the patient's weight. They last longer, so they don't have to be dosed as often. So instead of having to put the patient on an IV pump, we can just give them twice a day dose. We don't have to monitor PTT. Much more convenient for you. There's less risk of bleeding. There is less risk of thrombocytopenia. It can still happen, but it's like 10 times less risk. And there's you can still have the neurological injury, so still don't give to neurological patients. So which of these two drugs would you prefer to give to your patient? Any patient. You would want to give low molecular weight heparin. Why? Because there's fewer side effects, because it's more predictable, which means it's easier for you to give. It lasts longer, so you don't have to give it as many times. And you don't need to monitor the PTT. And as it turns out, at least for heart attacks, it works much better than regular heparin at saving a person's life and preventing further complications. So for those reasons, you would prefer to give a low molecular weight heparin. Now, the low molecular weight heparins, there's three of them. You only need to remember one, enoxaparin, or enoxaparin, if you want to think of it that way. Okay, the one reason, the major reason you'd give heparin instead of low molecular weight heparin is because it's cheaper. But you have to ask yourself, it's cheaper to give the drug, but it's more expensive to take care of that patient. And the patient might not do as well on regular heparin as they would on the low molecular weight. So is it cheaper in the long run? Yeah.
So pretty much just
right. Now, you don't have to make that choice.
Yeah.
But just in general, as far as you giving it, you would prefer to give low molecular weight. So enoxaparin or Lovenox is the only low weight molecular heparin that you need to memorize. And that will be on your test. You will give a ton of this stuff in MedSurg 1 and MedSurg 2, depending on what floor you're in. Again, make sure that you have an accurate weight on the patient. All right. Yes, ma'am. The normal dosing for the low molecular weight, I think it's the usual doses are going to be somewhere between 40 milligrams and 70 milligrams twice per day, and it's based on the patient's weight. Then we have some other drugs. Fondaparinux, the only reason I mention this one at all is because if you go to the VA, you may see this drug. It works like heparin, but it's safer and more predictable. You can think of it as an even safer low molecular weight heparin. So if you see fondaparinux, it works very similarly to low molecular weight heparin, just even a little bit safer. And that's all you need to know about that. The rest of this is just for your own curiosity. I'm sure you're very curious.